Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 40K Fireside Podcast. I'm David Gaylor, and I'm joined by my good friend, Vic Vijay. Together, we discuss 40K and the meta from our perspective, along with events we've recently been to and those that have got coming up. So come on down to the fireside and listen.
And welcome back, everyone, to episode 38 of 40K Fireside. We've had a little break. We're back. There hasn't been much to talk about, but now all of a sudden, all the important stuff is happening. We've got lots of events coming up. There's a lot of 40K to discuss at this point, and we're going to kind of hit the ground running on this episode and kind of start talking about some of the things we've been up to and some of the upcoming events. And that's going to be the focus of our episode. But before that, I just want to let Dave say a little hello.
Hey, yeah, we're back. Well, back. We never really left, but I think on theme with Vic and I is we only really make podcast episodes when we've got stuff to talk about. So, yeah, it's been a little bit of a lull, hasn't it, really, since LGT. It's kind of, not much has been happening. Not much in the game has been changing. I think since LGT, it's just been the Codex Marines release, right? That's really been it's something shaking it up. But I think there was a theme that people have discovered also is that there's a kind of undercurrent of strong armies that weren't present at LGT, perhaps, and that this kind of period between LGT and now, about a month, has really given people the chance to experiment with some armies that perhaps got a bit of a buff. And and they've actually really shone through, I think. I think the meta right now is looking pretty healthy, although I think we're all a little bit bored of playing against and with Eldari and Chaos Space Marines to some degree, although I think Eldari is the bigger offender of that. As I will confess, I am playing.
I do think that it's quite interesting that as people start to get bored of using the same strong things over and over again in a meta which is relatively healthy, where there's a lot of armies which are functional, I find it very interesting when players start to delve deeper into different indexes and start to create slightly more interesting armies to shake up the meta. I think you're still right, though. I mean, if you think about what's the armies that you think are going to do the best at a tournament, it's still going to be CSM and Eldari, but there's probably some other stuff which I think people are enjoying using at the moment, myself included. I definitely want to talk about Sisters a little bit at this in this episode, because I'm taking them to the Coventry Supermajor, and I'm really excited to kind of take them to a big event and see how my ideas actually come to play on the table.
Yeah, and so I guess an agenda for this episode, we're going to be talking about a team's event that myself, Boris, Chris Radford, and Lewis Smith went to this weekend down in Cardiff. Then we're going to chat, Vic's going to chat about Sisters. I might touch briefly on Guard, kind of post-LGT. I have been playing it quite a bit and then playing it in a team event. And then we will chat about Coventry tournament that we've got coming up as a kind of precursor maybe for what some people are going to take at the Warhammer World Champs, which is happening in the middle of November, which seems to be the kind of Olympics or pinnacle to some degree of singles Warhammer 40K. So everyone's been practicing for that a lot, myself included. So yeah, we've got a lot of good stuff to cover. So why don't we jump right in and chat about the team event that we did recently. Myself, I'm playing Eldari. Boris was playing Chaos Space Marines. Chris Radford was playing Marines with Death Company. He was playing Iron Storm, but the list submission was quite far ago, and I think the build now is more Gladius based. And he was playing a unit of 10 Death Company in there with Lamartes, 3 Dreads, 3 Whirlwinds, 3 Scouts, stuff like that. And then we had Lewis Smith, who is filling in for us from Bad Moon Brawler's team. Absolutely lovely guy who did really well on the weekend. Playing Tau as well. So it was a 4-man team event, WTC terrain-ish to some degree, and had an absolute blast. I've got to say, we were driving down to Cardiff, and this was kind of an application for Team England for Chris and Boris. You know, you have to, as a part of Team England applications, as I understand, you have to attend some events, and this was one of them. And so I said, I'll come and I'll help you guys out. And I've never been to Cardiff before, but if I'm being honest, it was quite far away in the middle of nowhere, and I was somewhat worried that it was going to be a bit grim. But it was lovely there, actually. We went to this store, called Firestorm Wargaming, I think, potentially, in West Cardiff. This was the best 40K store I've actually been to be honest with you. It was like giant glass door, massive. They had magic, fantasy. They had a mezzanine floor where the tournament was held. So much stuff, tons of board games. And it was incredible. And
Firestorm, interestingly, is the first GT I ever won was at Firestorm. I love that place. That store is amazing.
Yeah, and you know, they actually had some sponsors for the event as well. I think Art of War sponsored the event. I think they had some sponsorships from paint suppliers and one of the bag provided as well. I think it was Carver or something. And we won overall. And before I get to that, it was actually the first time I've won a prize for a Warhammer tournament, I think.
What do you mean?
we actually won something of monetary value. It was I felt almost bad. I was like, are you sure you guys want to provide us? I think someone from our team, we got about 110 quid's worth of gear, or maybe even more or something. And 80 of that was store credit. And, you know, I bought board games and stuff to take home with my wife. And yeah, it was quite unusual. But look, I had a blast. It was awesome to see people sponsoring the event. The food there was great. The people there were so nice. Yeah, it was awesome. So that was kind of the venue. So it was really nice to play in that area. And the rounds, we actually played against the, I think it was a 5-round 4-man team event. And we played against the 2nd, 3rd, 5th, and 7th, and maybe 10th placing team, I think, in the event. So we had, I think, the hardest run. And I think our closest round was against a team called Team Extinguish, because obviously we're called Team Ignite, which is kind of the Team England team, with Manny Chima, Ed Watts, Will Whitaker, and Dan Whitaker, the Whitaker brothers. Really good players as well. And, of course, I'm playing against Manny Chima in that round again, you know, time and time again, as we joked, where I played Aldari versus Manny's World Eaters on Sweeping Engagement, Purge the Foe, Hidden Supplies. And really interesting game. Manny's list was like 90 Jackals, and then I think it's like 15, 8 bound, like 5 units of 3 with Exalted and Non-Exalted, and then Angron and Demon Prince for the 4+ aura. And man, that's a good team's list. I'm not going to lie, that it was pretty hard to chew through that. We had a dead draw, 98-98, right down to turn 5. So yeah, that was the closest round we had. I think we got about 49 plays, 31 points there, WTC scoring. And yeah, then we played Matt Robertson's team after that as well. So yeah, went 5-0 there. Everyone had a blast. It was just a reminder about how awesome team events are, really, I think, you know. They're just such a fun way to play. And it was the first time where I got to play Aldari actually on the table. So it was quite important for me. I just kind of viewed it as a practice weekend. I've been playing a lot of Aldari on TTS, of course. And it's nice to get it on the board before a big tournament. So using Coventry in this tournament to prepare for Warhammer World Champs. And yeah, it was cool. Aldari's been really fun to learn as well. It's obviously powerful, but at the same time, I think there's a very big difference in player skill expression between kind of experts on it and just good players, for example.
Yeah, it's kind of becoming a trend with every army, isn't it? That, you know, there is definitely room, a complete difference when you play against someone who's skilled or practiced with an army. Mm. Or, you know, I had a big discussion on Facebook. I find this quite interesting, so I'm going to slot it in here. Mm. And there was a podcast run by Mike Bolton, I think. Yeah, Mike. He is a lovely guy, and he runs a podcast called The Stoic Gamer. Mm-hmm. And he did a 30-minute podcast talking about what makes a top player a top player, mm-hmm. and why do the same players always seem to be winning tournaments. Mm-hmm. And I found it very interesting to listen to that, because, I mean, his opinions don't exactly match mine, and I think that was the whole point of it, to encourage discussion. I think with every single army, whether it's the strongest army in the meta based on the statistics or not, it feels completely different to play someone who's good with the army. Mm. And then I thought about it a little bit more, and what makes someone good with an army. And really, in my opinion, I keep saying the words, like when I'm typing and discussing about it, core game knowledge. Mm-hmm. And those basic skills you have in the game. So like it's quite wide, but for example, you know, understanding threat ranges, understanding when to push, when to be defensive, counting your score and knowing like, look, if I, my only way of winning this game is if XYZ happens. So I'm going to focus on XYZ happening.
Yeah.
It's a huge number of things. And some people just have better core game knowledge, either by natural talent or by developing, practicing and getting experience with the game.
Yep.
That core game knowledge, when it's at a very high level, makes any faction feel completely different when you play against that person with good core game knowledge.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key differentiating factor between playing between people who win tournaments consistently.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, isn't it? Because obviously everyone has core game knowledge to a certain extent, right? So that would be the counter argument to your position, right? Is that, well, if you were to sit someone down, then they would go, okay, I'm going to do this, this, and this. And that would, you know, kind of show core game knowledge as well. But the reality is that under core game knowledge too, there is a huge amount of nuance that goes into that as well, right? And if you extend core game knowledge into list building and deployment as well, yeah, you cover a huge amount of skill sets that apply to every army, don't you, at that point?
Yeah, there's still a little bit which I don't fully understand. Like, let's say someone suggests something to you, Dave, like, oh, you should go here. Sometimes there's something deep inside you that tells you that that's a bad move.
Yeah.
But and you immediately know that that's not the correct way to do this. There must be something better.
Yeah.
But how do you quantify that particular ability to be able to kind of say that? That's the bit which I think is really hard to explain to people. And yeah, it's a, kind of an instinct that some people just have.
I think, you know, because I play a lot of board games outside of 40K with my friends, neighbors and stuff like that. We have big board game nights. And one thing that I always think of when someone says like, oh, you could do this, I always think, what does that prevent my opponent from doing rather than what do I gain from it? You know what I mean? Because a lot of people go, oh yeah, this is really good for me, or I'm going to take this card and this card, but they don't think first and foremost, what does this prevent my opponent from doing in some regards, right? So it's like disabling your opponent is just as strong as enabling yourself. But this is a big topic. Maybe we should get a couple of people on and and cover it as well. Yeah,
I just wanted to make one point about your team event to bring it back onto track.
Sure.
Is that, you know, both Chris and Boris are applying for Team England for the first time, and as you mentioned, and they're both members of Team Ignite, and I found it really amazing to see the way the kind of team members within our team have kind of supported and helped each other grow.
Yeah.
And I think it's not even surprising to me that you guys can go to this event, which is set up as one of the Team England application process events. So there were a lot of very good players there.
Yep.
And for you guys to be able to shine at this event, it's actually pretty awesome, man. It's really cool. Congrats.
Yeah, thanks. I think we're actually really, I mean, you know, we obviously, you know, we beat Team England at the Birmingham team event as well, which is a bit bigger, right? 5-man as well on standardized terrain. You know, I think we're so good at the process now of developing lists, doing pairings, understanding terrain, and understanding the players of our local scene as well, where they should match up, you know, because we're in the hotel the night before the Sunday night, Saturday night, talking about pairings. We've got Jokel on the phone, you know, what do you think about this? You know, analyzing everything, right? And it's becoming a bit more of a well-oiled machine, right? And yeah, hopefully that's obviously reflected too. Like we're playing, Vic and I are playing in the StatCheck Vibe Check League, which is another team event. So it's becoming a bit of a juggernaut within our team, where everyone loves to play the team events as well. And I mean, our roster feels so stacked at the moment too. I think we are also playing in we've just signed up for the Tryhard online team event too. And the roster is like myself, Vic, Brian Seib, Jokel, and then Liam VSL.
We've done well there, haven't we?
It's really cool because actually the round against Manny's team, Chris Radford actually pulled out a big 17-3. And, you know, it's really nice, I think, and a couple of people have said this in our team as well, is that, you know, you can, in a team event, in a team round, you can have a bad, something can, you can underperform, right? And oftentimes, if you're the standout player in your team, then when you underperform, you feel like there's no chance that you're going to win the round, if you know what I'm saying. But actually, you know, our team is, you know, we're so oiled at the moment. And, You know, we've developed our players so well that even if you underperform, there's just as much possibility that your teammates are going to overperform so much better as well.
And rely on your teammates.
Yeah, which is such a nice feeling as well. So yeah, it's really exciting. It looks like the UKTC calendar has gotten a lot more team events as well. And the USA is releasing more team events, and they've got the big USA team circuit as well. So yeah, it's very quickly becoming the de facto way to play Warhammer, which is really fascinating because that's just kind of taken a hold. I feel like after this WTC this year, has been the word's gotten out even more than it then. So
I think it's been on the rise for a while. Like the opinion, the teams is a really fun way to play 40K. But I think the changes, what's happened is that people have created some team events and realized, oh my word, this is so popular. The tickets just sell out immediately. Like hundreds of, where did that come from? Why does everyone have a team? But it's so cool, man. And I think we're in a great position to compete at these team events.
Yeah, excellent time. So without further ado, you've got some spice I know you're just dying to talk about. It involves crossbows. It involves anti-psyker 2+. Okay, Vic, I've never played against sisters, and I have no idea what they do. What is the list? Are you going to talk about your list? I guess the list submission's already been... Why don't you run through what you're taking to Coventry?
Okay, wait. Let me give background first, because there's people I have to thank, and it's kind of a big part of this process, because Sisters is not that is not a very popular army. It's one of the lowest played factions at the moment. But it's coming to the light at the moment, because there's been a few interesting and good results with some lists that look like pretty bad. When you immediately read them, you're like, what does this do? And then you read the profile and you're like, yeah, it still doesn't make sense. I've been a big fan of Mitch and the podcast he runs called The Sister Act for a while now. And I've been kept trying to go on to it, like every time I jump back onto Sisters. But what happened was I decided, let me take a little closer look at Sisters. So let me listen to the latest podcast on Sister Act. And it was Mitch and Typhus talking about Sisters, talking about like their experience and their list development process. And then I looked at some of the results. I looked at some of the lists that have been in play. And then I kind of developed my own version of what I think would work from Sisters, taking some of the ideas from them. So I have to give a lot of credit to lots of people, Mitch, Typhus, Scott Ketchum, for kind of helping me kind of come to where I am with the list.
Cool.
The Sister Act Discord is incredible. So if anyone's interested in Sisters, I would really recommend that, because that's the community is very, very good on there. And Sisters are one of those armies where they have two strengths. One strength is no one knows what they do. So often if you're playing playing a game at a tournament with Sisters, the opponent has going to have never played a practice game against Sisters. And potentially if they have taken some interest and have a friend who's played Sisters, it's unlikely to be the same, like more optimized build that you're using at a tournament. That immediately gives you a lot of strengths, because Sisters actually inherently have a lot of kind of very good stratagems, very interesting mechanics that other armies don't have. And the second big thing that happened was that there was quite a good points decrease on Sisters, which meant that the army is much better than it was before the points changes. And sometimes points changes can tip an army over the edge into actually being functional. And I think Sisters are that. I watched the Art of War tier list just prior to this, and Sisters previously, straight after the balanced data slate and the points changes, they were in the D tier, the lowest tier possible. And they've now placed them into their A tier, which is the second highest tier, which is very interesting to see how once you see people play decent lists, and you start to compete against them at tournaments, which is what the Art of War guys struggled against a Sisters list at a Supermajor. And that Sisters list went on to win the tournament. That's interesting how opinions can change so much. This is part of a bigger discussion on armies which are underrepresented. I know, for example, we've had a little bit of practice with Death Guard. You play Guard. And noticing that these armies actually can be good if you dive deeper into the index is something which I think is very rewarding and very interesting. And I'm trying to do that with Sisters at Coventry Supermajor. So my list for Sisters of Battle, let me actually get it up. Dave, did you have any questions? Anything you wanted to ask me?
Yeah, I guess Is there one particular standout? Sorry, I'm asking this, but I obviously know the answer. But is this one particular standout unit in Sisters that might begin with A? And
the interesting thing is that the Sisters list that won the Super Major had mm-hmm. zero arcoflagellants in it.
Okay,
and my mind is blown, right? But I think arcoflagellants are one of the best units in the game, let alone in Sisters. At 130 points for 10 of them with a 4 of Feel No Pain and 2 wounds on a unit that actually puts out a high volume of attacks, they just exist and do a lot for the points cost. It's a little bit too low. Mm-hmm. They're the only truly standout kind of single, you look at this data sheet and you're like, that's strong in Sisters. Every other data sheet you read, it's like, okay, that's okay, but it's kind of like, why is it like a little bit rubbish?
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
So wait, before we do that, there's a pretty good chance I play you at Coventry. So like, what is your detachment rule, and how does it affect the game, and what are your good stratagems?
Sure. So Sisters are Hallowed Martyrs, which is the same as their previous kind of Order of the Martyred Lady, which was the most standard Sisters detachment, which is where if you've taken any wounds, if you're below starting strength, you get +1 to hit.
Cool.
If you're below half strength, you get +1 to wound. So immediately, it's not a good detachment rule. It's okay.
That's not good.
No, it's actually kind of pretty bad. But it's okay. And then their big rule, the thing which actually makes them strong, is the miracle dice mechanic. Yeah. You gain a miracle dice at the start of each turn. So miracle dice are very similar to fate dice. In fact, they're almost identical to fate dice, but they were weaker when 10th edition initially dropped. Now they're slightly stronger than fate dice because you can use it once per unit per phase. So if you have five units, you can use five acts of fate in a phase, for example. And those fate dice can be gained in a number of different ways. Anytime a unit with a banner kills a unit, you gain a miracle dice. Anytime any of your units dies, you gain a miracle dice.
Nice.
Anytime a Sisters of Battle unit controls an objective in your command phase, you gain a miracle dice.
Is that one per objective or just one?
One per objective.
Oh, nice.
Sisters control. Cool. So actually, you can get a large volume of miracle dice in the mid game. So it's a little bit slower than fate dice. You don't have all of them to start off with, and you can't just get straight away get the good ones. But as the game progresses, you start to get more and more fate dice, miracle dice that you can use. And there aren't as many ways in Sisters to utilize your miracle dice as there are in Eldari for their fate dice. The mechanics aren't as good, but there are some really cool things you can do. The single biggest unit in the army, in my opinion, which again was not in the Super Major winning list, was the Palatine joining a Battle Sister squad. This is an awesome combo.
Okay.
So the Palatine gives lethal hits to this Battle Sister squad.
Nice.
And now this Battle Sister squad is mighty. This Battle Sister squad has a single multi-melt in it.
Oof.
Now, right? Yes. Okay. So this is, you look at the unit, you're like, right, he has a multi-melter and one melter gun. So I've got three melter shots in here. Now, you've also got another character who's 30 points called the Dialogus.
Mm-hmm.
The Dialogus is attached to the unit and can be attached alongside a Palatine, which is the thing that gives lethal hits.
Cool.
The Dialogus gives you the ability that anytime you use an act of faith on a unit, so a miracle dice, it automatically becomes a 6.
Oh,
now
so
that triggers
faster.
With lethal. Yeah, exactly. But it's you. Yeah, so it will trigger lethal hits on any miracle dice you use.
Nice.
The Triumph of Saint Catherine, who's the thing like six characters on a base together, with a little funeral procession, has a number of different abilities. But one of the ones you can select is that any unit within 6 inches can use as many miracle dice as you want. So you can do as many acts of fate.
Wait,
as you
so
want.
Is that like you pick a unit in your command phase and then you can spam miracle dice on that unit?
It's a 6-inch aura.
Oh, so it fix everything.
Yeah, everyone can use as many miracle dice as they want.
So you just keep pumping all your crap dice and you get like lethal hits on all your melters and then...
So yeah, you use three rubbish dice and you get three melter hits.
That's nice.
And then, so that this comes out of nowhere, right? These two models, suddenly three melter hits through. And then your opponent tries to save them. It's AP4. Imagine they don't have a save or have a 6-up save. All three of them go through. You pump three more miracle dice in, that's 18 damage. You know? All of a sudden, boom.
Yeah, that's pretty sick. So you can basically guarantee three hits, three sixes for damage for off 6 dice, which in the mid game on turn 3, like you've got a pretty good chance of getting, I'm assuming.
Yeah, and often you don't need to do 18 damage. You just need to do 12, for example.
Yeah.
So those little things are awesome, and this is coming from relatively cheap units.
Nice.
The Battle Sister Squad is also OC2. The Palatine also hits like an absolute truck because it's got an enhancement that makes her weapon 3 damage. Anytime she successfully wounds, it's a mortal wound in addition. Remember, the unit has lethal hits, so you can just throw as many miracle dice into that and she can hit all her attacks. Do 5 mortal wounds plus 5 3 damage AP2 saving throws needed. And then obviously sisters have some incredible stratagems. So the two main stratagems to watch out for is when you kill a character, they can get back up. You just sacrifice as many miracle dice as you want and they get back up with that many wounds.
Cool.
And it's at the end of the phase. So, you know, all these awesome Phoenix gem things.
Yeah.
Sisters have them on any of their characters, which is brilliant. And then we have a really good anti-melee stratagem called Suffering and Sacrifice, where you pick a unit that is in engagement range of an enemy unit, and anything in engagement range of that unit has to fight that unit who's using the Suffering and Sacrifice stratagem.
Right.
So you just throw like 2 Crusaders into this big melee brick and you charge them into the middle of it. And then you charge like your, like whatever character you want to actually fight with, or you want to just hold the objective or something, and they just tag like the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do Suffering and Sacrifice with your 2 little Crusaders that are 25 points. And the opponent's unit has to attack the Crusaders with everything.
Nice.
And
even if they're if they're not eligible to attack your Crusaders, they can't attack your other character.
No, you have to like position extremely carefully because it's only the models in engagement range of your Crusaders who would be affected by that strategy.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay, I'm with you.
But obviously, there's a huge number of applications for this particular stratagem. But that's just one example. There are much more powerful ways of doing it. Let's not give it all away at the moment. But imagine with those 10 arcoflagellants kind of being able to fight without getting punched back, getting little traps in corners, and the Crusaders kind of taking damage on one side, or a character that gets back up taking the damage on one side.
Nice. It's really thematic, that one as well.
Yeah, it's like so that. Cool. So, sisters also have a straight up +1 to wound in combat that they can use on any unit, which
always
does
good.
Help their output.
Yep.
But here's my list. So the list has Saint Celestine, the Triumph of Saint Catherine, has the Palatine with the upgraded sword, and the Dialogus. Those are the 4 main characters.
Cool.
I have 10 Battle Sisters and 10 Battle Sisters. Both of them have a multi-melter, melter gun, and the mightiest weapon of all, the crossbow on each. So the crossbow is a rapid-fire 1 anti-psyker 2+ devastating wounds precision gun. It's just a bolt gun, basically, but it's anti-psyker.
But it's a really crossbow. Useful. Like, that's the most important part.
It is literally a crossbow.
Sick.
And then I've got 3 units of 10 arcoflagellants, 2 units of 2 Crusaders. This is just chaff. And then 1 unit of 5 Seraphim. Seraphim are great. They're like Shadow Spectres. When they shoot, they can move 6 inches.
Nice.
I have 3 Exorcists, which is the indirect tank. It's a really good indirect platform, actually, in this particular meta. Being strength 10, AP -2, and D6 damage on D6 plus 2 shots with a heavy weapon is actually really good.
That's super good.
So I'm a big fan of the Exorcist. I know a lot of the Americans don't want to run as many Exorcists, but I'm just going flat out. I love the 3. You've got to make the most of it in this army and just throw them aggressively forward. They're a decent profile being T10. Exorcist. And then I have 2 Rhinos and an Immolator. The Immolator is cool. It's like what's it called? The Votan Sagittar, where you pick one of your Battle Sister units and you can split it into 2 5s.
Oh.
So one of my Battle Sisters, like one of the 5s, can just be on the home objective, another one in the Immolator. And the Immolator is like a Falcon, where if you shoot something, the unit inside your Immolator that's just disembarked gets reroll to wound against it.
Cool. So it kind of gives you that support function of being able to split a unit of 10 into 5 anyway, which is a nice kind of bonus.
Yeah, exactly. And now you've got 50-point Battle Sister squads with 5s.
One of those squads has the 2 multi-melters in it. 2 melters in it, I suppose, right? In the transport. Yeah. You get the 5s.
Exactly. So you have one squad that's backfield and one squad that actually has stuff in it.
Yeah, cool.
And to go along with that splitting squad, I have a Canoness. No one's running a Canoness, but I have a really cool converted Canoness, so I want to try it with a crossbow. And she's got the Brazier of Holy Fire, which is a one-use kind of flamer that's 2 damage.
Nice.
So that synchronizes really well with the reroll to wound.
Yeah.
She gives her unit rerolls to hit, so that unit coming out of the Immolator rerolls hits and wounds. So it doesn't really utilize the Miracle Dice combo of the other squad with the Palatine, but it kind of functions on its own with its own rerolls to hit and wound.
And
then I have a Castigator, which is just the sisters kind of heavy weapons tank. It's like a Predator, but it's sisters. And I think it is really good for 140 points.
Okay.
Got an extremely good gun, which is D6 plus 3 shots, strength 10, minus 1, and flat 3 damage. Cool. It rerolls to hit against monsters and vehicles, and it ignores cover base.
Cool.
That's just a solid gun to go alongside three heavy bolters that it has, and all of the sisters' vehicles come with a hunter killer missile. So there's a good amount of anti-tank in the list.
The hunter killers are good, right? They really add up now that you get them for free.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's a typo. Does everyone's hunter killers hit on twos?
No, the guard ones, they hit on fours, mate.
All of the sisters' hunter killers hit on twos.
Oh, that's really nice. Yeah.
I don't know why, but I don't know if it's a typo or a mistake, but it's literally across the board the hunter killers hit on twos.
That's really good, because then you can use your miracle dice on the wound roll, right? If you really want to make sure.
Yeah, you use it. I mean, it's strength 14, so it's great, but yeah, absolutely. Usually what you do with sisters is you save for the damage roll, because that's the one where you want to save to finish off a unit.
That's fair.
Because you don't tend to, like, you know, Eldar, you will use your fate dice on turn one. Like, whenever you get a chance, you'll use it. Whereas sisters want to try and hold on to their miracle dice to build up a big enough pool for your combo unit.
Cool, so then you have, like, a big explosive turn.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that's all my sisters' tech given away to our listeners.
Nice.
And it's fine, because sisters are awesome, and I'm so excited to use this list.
So, continuing on this educational point, obviously for the viewers, but more or less for me, obviously you've got these three Arcoflagellant squads, you've got a lot of MSU, I take it you're pretty good at tactical. Are you mostly playing tactical, or are you playing fixed with Tipoy Teleport Homers and something else? Or,
I mean, fixed is one of those ones where, like, if you can, you should almost, because Deploy Teleport Homers is so strong. So if you have a killing option there, like if I'm playing against Tau, I mean, I'm probably going to go bring it down in Homers rather than expend my resources in an unpredictable fashion with tactical. So where possible, I think this is like pretty much any army, try and take fixed if you can, because everyone can play Deploy Teleport Homers off the 6 inches from the center, especially on UKTC. It's kind of easy.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. So if your opponent gives it up, obviously, basically, I guess, on a side note, in list design currently, you should place emphasis on being able to do homers. And if your opponent gives anything up, basically take that. And your game plan should be homers plus what they give up. Assassinate. If you're playing against Chaos Space Marines, you know, they have to use their big characters to damage you, et cetera, et cetera. Because it gives you a really consistent game plan.
There's an interesting thing with my list, actually. It's on 20 assassinate and 20 bring it down.
Oh.
But 9 of the bring it down is in exorcists, and the assassinate is like, it's kind of cheap characters that you just can not attach and just hide in a corner.
That's interesting. So what are some of the obviously you said sisters, they get kind of in that A tier, and I feel like a lot of the game is kind of one big A tier at the moment, right? It's obviously that's not completely true, but it feels very level at the moment. What are some of your good matchups? What are some of your bad matchups for sisters?
So I think it's really bad matchups and then the rest.
Yeah, okay.
And I think the bad matchups are primarily anything with 2+ armor saves. Now, I say this, but I went to a tournament and I played against 25 Votan Hearthguard. Now, that is a nightmare, because sisters are not very good at killing 2+ saves. The Arcoflagellants will just be flailing away.
Yeah, they have AP0 on the Arcoflagellants, right?
They do have AP0. But what I found is if you put 20 Arcoflagellants into Hearthguard, in 3 turns, you will get them. You will kill a brick of Hearthguard. So I managed to kill all 25 Hearthguard with my army somehow.
Yeah.
Just by careful use of like the grenade stratagem and putting my damage in the right places. You have to kind of put all your damage in to be able to get through 2+ saves. So I would say 2+ saves is a weakness.
Yep.
That means armies like Grey Knights and Votan, and of course the mighty Wraithguard for Eldari are a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Eldari in general are a massive problem, because the Wraithguard are almost unplayable for this army.
Okay.
You just, like, there's a way that you can maybe deal with them. There's a few things, but everything relies on your opponent being rubbish.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll manage to beat Eldari, but I probably shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
CSM is another problem, because I think they're just sisters but better. almost.
Okay. They don't have the indirect that maybe you have with the Exorcist platform, right?
All we have is indirect, and that strikes fear into the opponent. But 90% of the time, it does nothing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, the classic Manticore argument.
It's one of those, like, where, you know, oh, this looks like a really good profile, and then you shoot it, and it just, it does nothing. I want to run two Exorcists, but the third one is the one that always does all the damage, so the first two let you down. So.
Yeah, of course. What was I going to say? Does the Exorcist get the heavy keyword? Does it hit on threes, or is it on fours?
It does.
That's nice.
Keyword, so it's awesome, man. Yeah, I love the Exorcist. And they also look so cool.
It's an interesting theme that any army that has a reasonably well-priced indirect platform, oftentimes you see that players will just play three of that because the game at the moment allows you to shoot those platforms for five turns, more or less, right? Yeah. And it's very common that armies can do that whilst, you know, and then when you price them at being able to shoot five turns, it's very hard to look away from them, right, isn't it?
I mean, a lot of people would probably swap out two of my Exorcists for Morven Vol and her three Paragon Warsuits, otherwise named as Nundums. I quite like that name. they look absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah,
they're also insanely cool. And that unit is very much a hammer unit. It's probably the unit that does the most damage in Sisters.
Okay.
But I've decided to go for the Triple Exorcist because, like you mentioned, the benefit of indirect fire is that you can combine five turns worth of damage, not just a single turn worth of damage. And actually, even over three turns, two Exorcists will do more damage than this Paragon Warsuit unit.
And without speaking out of turn, I would imagine the Paragon Warsuit being quite poor against Eldari, whereas the Exorcist give you some kind of potential in that matchup, right?
Yeah, the thing is, like, let's take this Paragon Warsuit unit. If it connects with your Wraithguard, like with its shooting and its combat, it's going to be great. Mm-hmm. But are you really ever going to let me connect, Dave?
No.
Like, I am playing them out of strategic reserves. I'm going to rapid ingress them in. And you are going to put one Wayleaper in exactly the spot where I would love to drop. Yeah. And I'll be dropping in the opposite corner away from everything else. Yeah. And then spending two turns trying to swing my way around to try and get them.
But even with that, you could Night Spin them and then Fire and Fade your unit that's near it and then Phantasm away from it in the turn as well, which would be really hard to chase.
Whereas those two Exorcists, what do you know? Like, I shoot one, randomly Fugan dies. I shoot another one, randomly a Night Spinner dies. That's the kind of stuff you need to be armies which are better than you.
Yep, for sure. You need to have some kind of threat, right? Like some kind of threat that, even if it's got a randomness element to it, could be very good. Whereas something guaranteed like a Paragon Warsuit is guaranteed, it's a fixed position that it's never going to do anything really, right? It's not going to get into the target you want. Only if your opponent is poor, in which you would win with the Exorcist regardless of that, right?
Correct. Exactly. I think it's a win more button for me, in my opinion. And I'm not going there to try and hit 4-1. I think if I was going to go and try and, you know, do well at a tournament, I'm going to go for the Paragon Warsuits. They will help me get through that tournament with a good record. Mm-hmm. But if I want to go and try and win the event, then I need to look for alternative solutions where I have agency on my side rather than my opponent immediately winning a game because of the unit choice I made. Paragon Warsuits in the box for now, and maybe I'll come to regret it.
Nice. That's Sisters, man. They've Sisters have been pretty powerful in the past, right? I remember you playing a tournament at Bournemouth that we went to. You've been playing them for a while, like on and off through 9th edition as well. You know, I think they've always been one of your armies where you've been like, oh, they're good, like, you know, I want to try and make them work, let's get a practice game. I'm playing Sisters, I want to see if they're good, you know, sort of thing. So that's nice when your army kind of comes around, right? And
excited back in the aesthetic, I just love it. The mechanics, I just love it. So hopefully they can be okay. But you may not actually play against them because I think I can only do the 2-day tournament.
No.
And there's no more crossover now. You can't go through the 3-day and after day one switch over to the 2-day anymore. Oh. So we may never cross paths, Dave.
Oh, thank God. I'm sure you'd beat me.
We will strike fear into both tournaments in Coventry.
Preach it, sister.
Awesome. So what's our next topic, Dave? What's your Coventry plan? Your Coventry and Warhammer Worlds, because they kind of cross over, don't they?
So I think probably throughout this year, since 10th edition launched, I haven't really had time to practice to the degree which I would normally practice, you know. We had WTC, but I had a lot of live stuff on, and I probably played only got to play realistically about 10 games of Death Watch, and Chris Radford was doing some of this design with me, helping me out with that as well, you know. And then post that, I had a ton of live stuff on, and then we had LGT, and then I, you know, played guard there. And so this has actually been the first time in 10th edition where I've really had a chance to play, to pick an army, have a tournament in a month where I can prepare for a month and a half, and then practice leading up to that. So after LGT, I decided, hey, you know, guard, as much as I love playing them, I'm not going to fly to Atlanta and not put my best foot forward, basically. So yeah, I sat down and looked at armies, and I thought, you know, what's kind of army that I would like? What's perhaps one that could develop me as a player as well in learning? And obviously it's going to be strong, and it's got a lot of player expression, and it's got a large amount of depth to it. And I think Eldari kind of fit the bill on that one. I'll just go through my list. I'm basically playing the same one I played last weekend, the same one I played at Coventry, and I kind of locked in my list a week and a half ago or 2 weeks ago what I was going to play at World Champs, because I would rather just, there's so much to consider in the meta right now. You know, you've got some Horde list, you've got some, you know, then you've got a lot of Eldari mirrors, potentially you've got a lot of CSM probably. And I think everyone's probably at the moment, today is like list submission for World Champs. So I think everyone's probably umming and ahhing at the moment around the last 100, 200 points in their list. You know, how do you account for this? How do you account for that? And instead of doing that, I just thought, you know what, I'm going to play the list. I'm going to get as many reps in as possible. I think it's really good, really balanced, and that's what's going to just give me the most consistency. And then usually I practice on TTS almost exclusive, like I said. So I wanted to play a list that I was going to play in real life as well, so I get some onboard practice with it. So the viewer is probably going to go to sleep now, but I'm playing Fuegan, Ortok Wayleaper with the gem, and Mandiblasters, Incarn. And then I'm playing Spirit Seer with Fate's Messenger, 10 Wraithguard, 3 Night Spinners, a unit of 5 Rangers, a unit of 5 Hawks, a unit of 5 Hawks, a unit of 5 Warp Spiders, a unit of 5 Warp Spiders. And that's basically just 2,000 on the nose. It's a 3 Night Spinner list that has 5 pieces of chaff to it, which I think is kind of the minimum you want to play, given, you know, CSM and what like that, and potentially needing to take tactical some games and stuff like that as well. So, yeah, it's been quite interesting. I've definitely... Actually, over the last like couple of weeks, I've been thinking a lot about what you said probably quite a while ago, which was thinking about how to win the game and dominating sections of the board. And that's definitely true with an army like Eldari for sure. You know, you focus on carving out parts of the board, and your army is so fast that you can then split your opponent's army up and, you know, deal with stuff later, and then focus on one side of the board. Holding your primary is one of your most difficult issues, right? So, you know, doing that, making sure that's locked down in the early game, and then sweeping up and encircling your opponent's army in the later parts of the game. So yeah, it's been good. You know, there's some elements I don't really like about it. You know, you've got like Night Spinners are, it's a bit like this. It's a bit like the slot casino sometimes. You know, you're like, oh, I think I dealt 8 mortal wounds once on the weekend, and it was just like,
oh my god,
I was just like, yeah, I'm sorry, man. yeah, so there's that element of randomness to it, but at the same time, you've got Fate Dice, you've got consistency there as well. You know, the Incarners are really fun, Wraithguard are really good to play, and it's a stock standard stuff you guys have probably heard time and time again. Mm-hmm. But that's what I've decided for World Champs. I don't know if it's the 100% right army to play, but it's what I've been practicing, and I think should be good to have fun and pilot.
I think it's super strong, and I think we have a great benefit. I'm gonna be honest, I think it's definitely in the top 2 strongest armies in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like the particular archetype that you're using, in my opinion. And I think because we have a team of players with a lot of good Eldar players in there, I think we're really well positioned to play the mirror.
Yeah.
I went to a small GT, like 60, 70 people.
Yep.
And I'd say a fifth of the field, so kind of 20% of the field, was a copy of this Eldar list.
Yeah.
And it didn't win the tournament, but that's beside the point. It's more that this is going to be, you're in a position where people are going to be expecting your list, and also other people are going to be bringing your list. And it's in situations like that where having power over the mirror is extremely strong. So, you know, come on, Team Ignite. You got this.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So, I think, so a lot of players moving on to Coventry, it's a 3-day/2-day tournament. And you can either sign up for the 3-day or the 2-day tournament. And a lot of people going to Coventry are also playing at World Champs. Now, the only and frustrating part here is that the submission for World Champs is before the actual tournament for Coventry. So in basic sense, you can't play Coventry and then submit your list for World Champs, you know, with some bit more practice in your back pocket. So kind of what you're playing for Coventry is probably what you're going to play for World Champs, because it's an excellent tournament. It's a bit smaller this year, but there are a lot of very good players in there. So it'll be very good practice for anyone attending. Now, given that, I thought maybe I would go through some people and what they're bringing. And let's maybe take a look at the meta as a whole. Because this weekend, a couple of things have jumped out at me. And one of these lists that kind of archetype that have jumped out at me is this list, which I think is a bit of a dark horse. It's called Black Templars. Now, Vic, can I interest you in about 140 marine bodies?
I don't know. Is that any good?
That's the list. That's what people are playing. Yeah. Haydar from Team Iceland, which is this list is right up his alley.
Literally, you could just guess that's his list.
Yeah. Haydar is playing this, and Edwards played it at the tournament, and I think this list has kind of been going around doing the rounds. It is basically variants between 100 with characters and good buffing characters, and 140 at the very high end with no characters. And the strength of this list is that Black Templars get a 6+ feel no pain, and then some of their large squads get a 5+ feel no pain, and they also have a character usually which they take, which basically turns one of their Black Templar Crusader squads into an ultimate killing force, stacking a bunch of buffs on it. So Haida's list is 50 assault intercessor squads. I haven't seen that variant before, but yeah, okay, they're 160 points for 10. And then he's got 5 Primaris Crusader squads, which are the Black Templar kit ones. And he's got some assault intercessors with jump packs, and then some infiltrators, and then of course, for 55 points, scout squads are probably the best data sheet in the game right now. I don't know how they're 55 points. That's a little bit interesting. And he's got the Librarian and Phobos armor, which I think in the meta right now is a pretty good pick. The untargetable outside of 12 infiltrator squad against Night Spinners, maybe even against Sisters, but against Whirlwinds as well, is a good pick for the meta right now. So yeah, that's kind of the list. It does cleanse and homers, is my understanding. And or variants of that do. And if you can't kill 140 marine bodies, then it's going to be very difficult for you to win the game.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. And then who else have we got? Now, the CSM kind of lists have been doing the rounds, I guess. You know, what? I feel like CSM's got a bit more build variants than Eldar at the moment. And I think it's always
interesting. I really like Manny's list, actually.
Yes, this is exactly
is that the one you're going for.
Yes, of course.
This is fascinating. I think this is very innovative.
Yeah, so I think it's obviously not similar to what he played at LGT, but it's 3 Chaos Lords, 3 Dark Communes, 3 Legionnaires, 3 Rhinos, 3 Accursed Cultists, and 3 Chosen, and a Forge Fiend and a Nurgle. Now, this is basically Chaos Space Marines with 3 Accursed Cultist bricks inside it as well. So it's a bit more of the hoardy option for CSM. It's got a bit more of a footprint, and for what you're sacrificing is basically you've only got 1 Forge Fiend, which is undivided, and then you've only got 1 unit of Nurgling, so you're not playing any Obliterators, and so you're basically just not playing any Obliterators, and your second Forge Fiend is out, and you haven't got an extra unit, or you haven't got like a 10-man brick of Chosen, for example, and your third unit of secondary units is Legionnaires, which are a slight downgrade, but the benefit of that is you get these Accursed Cultist bricks, which are, with the Commune, I think 22 models, something like that, quite large. Yeah. And if you don't play Abaddon, you still get the 5+ invulnerable save.
Correct.
To chew through. They also regrow, so they're not as vulnerable to Night Spinners as potentially people would think, because when you regrow, you get quite a lot of distance as well. And then they have that once per game ability to four rerolls to hit and wound or something like that, or advance and charge or something. So
you know what they are vulnerable to, Dave?
Oh, sisters.
No, sisters bolt guns.
Oh.
The crossbow bolt gun, because it's a psycho unit. You can pick out that character, giving them a 5-up in loan. Boom.
All right, public service announcement. Hide your spirit seers. Hide your fast seers. Get behind those walls, people.
I'm coming for you.
He's coming for us. And then, yeah, if we look down the list in terms of top armies, so that's Eldari. Well, we've covered Eldari, and that's Black Templars. And we've got Votann, which I think has been another popular one at the moment. It's been making the rounds. I think Votann are pretty good right now, to be honest with you.
I agree.
You know, it's the 5 or 6 Sagittar list with 10 to 15 Hearthguard, 15 Berserks, which is what you should play. And then in addition to that, usually 3 units of Pioneers, a couple of Champions, and then, you know, however varying amount of Thunderkin you want to play as well there. So I think they're really strong. And then we've seen a pretty large variance of Marine builds as well, which is nice to see, because I thought when Marines came out, it was just going to be all Iron Hands, 3 Whirlwinds, Dreadnoughts, and stuff like that. And it's been nice to see people tinkering with that faction and producing more with it.
Harrison on just the Iron Storm usual.
Yes,
thing.
Alex Harrison has a bit of a weird list.
Quadruple Impulsor. It's just a lot of vehicles.
Yeah.
Quadruple Impulsor, 3 Predator Destructors, 2 Whirlwinds, 2 Reapers, Gladiator Reapers. Oh my god. That's like 10 vehicles.
Yeah.
What even goes at the Impulsors?
I'm a little unsure, but I would love to play against it with our Wraithguard, though.
And the other awesome one is our teammate, Brian.
Yes.
With the T-Suns.
Brian, going with the T-Suns. Played him last night. He beat me.
Yes.
Yeah, Thousand Suns have still got it. They're pretty good. You know, I think they suffer a little bit from, you know, your tech choices are either really good or they're really bad in some matchups, you know. You can tech to beat things really well, but you can't tech against everything in T-Suns, which I think is a little unfortunate.
This is a core game skill army, Dave. This
core
is
game
where
skill army.
If you get the strategy down on this army, you can win any game, but you have to like be so correct with the way you do everything. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be a great challenge for Brian. He is one of the most technical players that we have on our team.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's gonna love this.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And yeah, that's kind of how the meta is shaping up. We've got, you know, there's quite a lot of Eldari there as well. So it'll be a good opportunity to practice. And then, you know, a bunch of other Marine builds. I think Marine builds might be the most popular out of, you know, the combined super faction there, which is good. You know, it's nice to see a Codex be balanced and do well and slightly thematic with a build diversity behind it as well, which is nice. Yeah, that's
Liam's
kind of
coming as well, isn't he?
Yes, of course. Liam is playing Chaos Space Marine.
Yeah, he's doing that. Like, I like his Rubric Marine tech. I'm using that in our team TTS tournament, the
yep.
live check one. I'm a big fan of the Rubric Marines inside the Rhinos to go alongside the Chosen. I think it adds a lot to the list.
Yep.
But yeah, he's done some tweaking to try and reduce the assassinate count and the bring it down count on the list,
yep.
which I think does help in some matchups. So.
Yep, definitely helps versus the Eldari matchup. Yes, of course, Liam.
Back to back super mages potentially. Oof.
That'd be strong. That'd be very strong. Yeah, he's got 2 units of Rubric Marines, 2 units of Obliterators, 2 Forge Fiends, and then 1, 2, 3 Chosen, 3 Rhino, which is kind of the difference between him and his and Manny's list. He basically would get Blue Scribes, 2 Rubric Marine squads, Warp Talons, Obliterators, and a Forge Fiend for the price of the 3 Accursed Cultists.
You know, Manny does it every time, where you look at his list and you're like, that is so obvious. Why did I think of that? That just makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. His World Leaders list was very good on the weekend, I thought.
Nice.
And should do Manny well.
Teamer.
Yep.
Brilliant list builder.
Yep. And then, you know, we've got a few guard there as well. I think.
You know who else is on Sisters? Jack Tide.
Oh, awesome. Yes. In fact, I was chatting to him as well.
Great, yeah, what a hero. He's got a good sisters list.
Yeah.
Kind of similar, it's a little bit different to my one, but
yep.
I think I like his version, actually, to be honest.
Nice.
So good luck. Come on, Jack. You got this.
Yeah, and there we go. Wait. So we've got Warhammer World Champs coming up in the middle of November. I'm flying out hopefully a day before, so I can kind of work from Atlanta and a acclimatize, get over the jet lag probably.
I'm not going to be attending the event. I did actually manage to get a golden ticket, but yes. I'm not attending that one. I'm going to just do the Coventry and then cheer you guys on from
the sidelines. Oh, we'll miss you. But yes, obviously Vic and our team have been putting in a lot of practice with us as well. And I'm still looking for a Fuegan if anyone's got one, you know.
Do they even make that army anymore? Half of the armies I own are being borrowed for this event. it's interesting.
Can I, hey mate, can I take this? And everyone's willing to help out, which is nice to see. So yeah, plenty of Warhammer. It's going to be a busy November. And then I think it's going to be pretty quiet for a while. We're playing some online team events and everything's going well. Do you know when we're up for the next balance patch, Vic? Is that going to be December sometime?
So normally chapter approved is in December.
Yeah.
But I actually think this is going to spill over into January before we get a balance update. So in the new year. That's kind of become the thing they did last year, where they waited till after Christmas, if I remember correctly. So
yeah, that was
that's what I'm expecting.
Yep, and that was with LVO. So hopefully there's not a... hopefully the lessons are learned from last year, where there is not a whole lot of leaks and whatever, and people knowing, and then LVO being on the horizon for the end of ITC and whatnot like that. It'd be nice if they avoided that this year. Then we've got a couple of codexes coming out, two that I'm looking forward to. I think we've got Necrons and Admech are the next two. So that'll be good. I own both those armies and I've been really enjoying them. I haven't played Admech. I haven't put that on table for a long time. So it'd be nice to see them get a little bit of a bump, get some better detachments maybe. And,
Nice.
There we go. I think next time we catch it, we'll probably be interviewing Liam again for his commentary win. So. So thanks for listening, guys. It's been a little bit, but not a lot's been happening. So every time we try and record an episode, it's to actually provide some information, not just fill the ear. So we'll catch you next time at the fireside. Episode 50 is just 11 episodes away now. So that's exciting. We'll try and do some coverage, maybe at Coventry, and maybe at World Champs as well. That'd be nice.
Yep. And make sure, you ask us any questions, leave messages, comments and stuff. And subscribe to us on whatever platform you have been listening on. And, as always, we will see you next time by the fireside.
Thank you for listening to the 40K Fireside Podcast. Vic and I hope you've enjoyed listening, and we greatly appreciate any feedback that you can provide after the show.